Hello and welcome to The Progress Theory, where we discuss scientific principles for optimizing human performance. I am Dr. Phil Price, and on today's episode, we are joined by former GB fencer and now mindset and performance coach, Claire Bennett. Now, mindset is such an important part of the elite performer. We're so focused on achieving a particular goal that we often lose sight on what's important, which can lead to resentment and sometimes poor performance. In this episode, Claire talks about her experience at the top level of fencing and how she's utilized all of that experience to start her mindset and performance coach business, Perform Be Happy. As always, follow The Progress Theory on Instagram and YouTube and check out all of our other content. Here is Claire Bennett. Are you a hybrid athlete who wants to learn more about how to combine your strength and endurance training? Well, I've written a new book, The Science of Hybrid Training. In this book, I provide insight into the misconceptions surrounding strength and endurance training by distilling the past 50 years of research and drawing on the conversations I had with great scientists, coaches, and athletes on the Progress Theory podcast. This book is essential reading for hybrid athletes and coaches who are looking to understand the key training variables and their effect on the simultaneous development of strength and endurance performance. Get your copy now, available to buy from Amazon. Now, let's get into the show. Claire, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I love it. I love in-depth conversations about anything performance-related, so really excited to be here.
Oh, brilliant. Right. Like I said before we started recording, I really wanted to ask questions about your journey going from a professional athlete and now into a coach. And it's always those questions and stories around that journey, which always the most profound messages always come out. So, yeah, really looking forward to this.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I'm excited.
Before we get into a load of the questions that I have, do you want to tell the viewers a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, of course. So my background started in performance, I guess. So I used to do fencing for Great Britain. I retired just after London 2012 Olympic Games. I started when I was 10 years old. So I had a good 17 years of kind of dedicating myself to a sport that I just wanted to be the best at. When I was at school and, you know, during university, I was known as Claire the Fencer. And then when I retired from sport, when I was about 27 years old, I decided that in my life beyond sport, I really wanted to support and develop other people. That's my passion now. And super lucky to have found something that makes me feel as alive as I did when I was fencing, and to have found that purpose in my life beyond sports. So yeah, that's what I do now. I've got my company called Perform Be Happy, which is just all about supporting people to achieve their performance goals or well-being goals in whatever area they work in. So I work with corporates, but I also work with young people facing disadvantage, and also work with the top orchestras in the country, help them with like their performance anxiety before they go on stage. So again, really cool to kind of use what I learned from elite level sport to help others in completely different arenas, but still at high performing levels.
No, that's really cool. I hear a lot of stories about former athletes that because they've put so much time and mental effort into achieving that particular goal to be as best as they can be at that sport, as soon as that's gone, it can be a bit of a struggle to find a new purpose. It sounds like that transition was quite easy for you because you found that passion in helping others quite quickly.
I tell you what, it wasn't as easy as I'm describing it as being. They say it takes about 2 years for an athlete to transition like fully in their life beyond sport. But of course, that can vary from how you stop your sport, whether, you know, it was normative or non-normative, in the sense you might be injured and you have to stop abruptly and it's not something that you'd planned, or something that was planned like me. But it still took me much longer than I thought. It wasn't an easy time. I felt lost. I felt dejected. I remember 2 weeks solid, I didn't leave the house. I was really depressed, because the problem is you lose your identity. That was who I was. And like fencing being a minority sport and pretty niche, I was just like, it's so stressful. You know, how am I going to be valuable in society? How am I going to be more than just my medals when I'm an expert in fencing? I mean, who cares about fencing, right? So it was about me kind of building my confidence, understanding how my skills were transferable into the workplace and into real life. That is such a scary thing for an athlete, because quite often you might have zero work experience, you've not experienced office life, or so there's lots of fears that you build up in your head as well. So it was a hard time. And I remember wanting to jump into new, really big challenges straight away. And it was the worst thing I could have done. I remember after 2012, I wanted to join the bobsleigh team to go to Sochi at Winter Olympics in 2014. I mean, completely ridiculous things. And I was throwing myself into lots of really challenging, high-performing things to kind of prove that I could be successful in something else really quickly. And what I needed to do really was just take a step back and just let things settle and just have a moment for me to really understand, okay, what are my passions? What are my strengths? And how can I do something that makes where I'm kind of in my element and where I can be valuable to society and to other people?
During your fencing career, you achieved Commonwealth gold. Am I right?
Yes, I did. Yeah. In the team event. So I captained the England team. Yeah.
Do you think that played a role at all, or does it? Have you ever spoken to other athletes that have been in kind of same situations?
I think it's like anything in life, right? If you can have a bank of like strong experiences that you're really proud of, that you can reflect on and look back on and think, okay, yeah, you know what? I did really well and everything came together on the day and this is what I needed to do in order to make that happen. You kind of, I guess it does give you some sort of confidence through that strong experience that you could do something really difficult and challenging in something else in your life beyond sport. But, you know, that being said, I actually didn't reach my goal in my sport. I left feeling a little bit empty because I didn't quite make the Olympic Games. And that was my goal. That was where I really wanted to be. However, so proud of that, you know, getting that gold at the Commonwealth Games and even more so with the team, which felt more special as well to me. You know, everyone says have no regrets and everything in your sport. But I didn't leave feeling completely satisfied with where I was or where I wanted to be because I wanted to be an Olympian. And the danger there was kind of wrapping up your own self-worth and your own self-esteem with results and with titles. And what I know now is actually, it is about the journey. It's about the process. I know it's so cheesy and everyone says it, but it is about enjoying the moments along the way because it's something that I never managed to do in my fencing career. I put so much pressure on myself to the point where I was frozen. Most of the time I was like rabbit in headlights when it was like the pressure was on. And I do regret that. If only I had just kind of enjoyed myself more, focused on why I was doing it more, you know, the mastery of the sport, wanting to just have that sense of continuous improvement, you know, rather than achieving that Olympic kind of level, I think I would have been able to express myself more freely and 100% be a better performing athlete. So I'm not sure if that answers the question. Kind of, yes, it's great to have that strong experience of captaining the England team at the Commonwealths, but I still felt like I hadn't achieved everything I wanted in my fencing career as well. I'm sure lots of athletes feel the same as well, you know, even if they reach the highest. And also, even if they got that gold medal at the Olympic Games, sometimes it doesn't feel like what they want it to feel. Sometimes it doesn't give them that satisfaction, that fulfillment that they're expecting. And that's the hardest thing, because then you question, okay, was that goal really for me? Or was it for someone else? Or, you know, was it to make my dad proud? Or, you know, whatever it is. It's interesting.
Yeah, certainly. I had that impression as well that you got these high performers that are so driven that they achieve what they set out to do. And then it's like either a what next and he's something else, or that high level that they've reached and have aspired to get to for so long doesn't actually satisfy them. So that's why they go looking for other things. Is that experience that you had one of the main reasons for, you know, you focusing on helping elite athletes, performers, and I guess developing athlete or performer self-care? Because I guess whenever you think of performance, you think of all the things that you need to do to get to that level. But we seem to forget around the relationship you have with all of that and the appreciation of where you are. Has that experience led you towards creating Perform Be Happy?
I think so, because, you know, again, if I had thought about my own well-being as well when I was doing sport, if I had a kind of more person-centered approach or athlete-centered approach when I was fencing at the time, what I did actually do really well was find a support team that was outside of my fencing bubble as well, people who were kind of had that objective perspective that would be able to lift me up and bring out the best in me. But I wish I had found that early on in my career, because that was quite towards the end of my career that I found a couple of mentors in particular who were just incredible at supporting me in my journey and helping me not just with the well, not with the physical side, but with the mental and emotional side. It's so important in an athlete's career, or anybody's career, where no matter what you're doing, that you have to, it's not just the end goal, the outcome. It is about thinking about what makes your soul sing alongside, you know, what you're doing. Well, what makes you happy and what makes you tick, you know? And for me at the time, fencing was actually, especially when it got to really elite level and, you know, there's no hiding place at the top. And towards the end of my career, it became so miserable for me. So miserable. It's a shame that I've had the perspective that I have now, which is actually to just not put so much pressure on myself and just to really just want to kind of enjoy the process and everything along the way.
Yeah, I've said this to many people in different kind of settings. Just you wish what you know now, you could go back and do the same thing again, but with your kind of new knowledge and your approach to life. And you almost, oh, I wish I'd appreciated that. I wish I knew what I know now to go back and do it all again. And it would be a completely different story. Yeah, I can see that being applied to many different things, but really when, you know, to something like pursuing a goal like in elite sport.
Yeah, I mean, what I wish now, actually, in hindsight, I can see now that when I was fencing, I was actually a negative perfectionist, you know, and this is very common in high-performing people and high-performing environments. You know, most people who have high ambitions are perfectionists, and it can easily go the wrong way. I was that person who, after training, I'd spend that extra hour in the fencing cell or in the sports hall, just kind of just repetitively trying to what I thought would be becoming a better performing athlete. But actually, you know, I really believe in this notion of like, and I think this is what I would do differently, is be much more purposeful with my time and my practice, you know. And everyone says practice makes perfect. And actually, I just don't agree with that at all. I think perfect practice is perfect. And so what I mean by that is just like, you know, not to be that person who's going to go to the spend hours and hours in the gym, or actually go to every session. Right, today I'm going to target my footwork, or I'm going to think about conditioning my legs because, you know, fencing is fast and explosive, or I'm going to think about timing. And I think if I had also been more purposeful with my time, kind of cut back on certain things, I think that would have made me less stressed as well. And my whole frame of mind and perspective around what I was doing, my anxieties would be much less. So I think I would change that. And also, you know, what we were talking about earlier, just that mindset shift of you're not just your thoughts. And I would had this crippling anxiety when I was fencing. And now I'm way more in control of my thoughts. I really am. And so those are definitely things that I would change, is kind of just sometimes trying to be an observer of your thoughts and not letting them completely override everything. But also being able to just step back and say no and have those healthy boundaries and like be really super mindful about what you do with your time, because it is about that perfect practice and not just continuously putting yourself out there and doing this rigorous training regime. That's kind of how I feel anyway.
What did you call that? A negative perfectionist?
Yes, a negative perfectionist. Yeah.
Have you worked with many negative perfectionists in your time with Perform Be Happy? And are you looking at them thinking, oh, I recognize what you're going through with what I went through. And, you know, you're very deliberate with the feedback that you give and the guidance that you give, because you're like, oh, I've been there. I don't want you going through what I experienced.
Yeah, 100%. You know, you can see it really early doors. It's those people who don't have boundaries, who can't say no. I always say to my clients, you know, time off is not time wasted as well. That's a really big one. And there are warning signs, you know, that also, you know, of course, there's a really good side to perfectionism. If you use it in the right way, you know, you can use these high performing traits because you're the one who's going to put the extra effort, the dedication, the commitment, and you will make it happen. But it's just being mindful about what you do with your time, how you spend it, and having those healthy boundaries in place. But another person back in the day, I remember reading an article on Johnny Wilkinson, and he said in an article that he was a negative perfectionist. And I remember thinking, I really relate to that. And I remember him talking about how he would spend hours after training hours, like kicking the ball and just, you know, doing that kind of repetitive training. But actually, it ends up leading to resentment and burnout. And I guess that for me, that's the warning sign of someone who has those kind of negative perfectionist tendencies.
How do you steer them away from that? It sounds like something that could potentially be either hard to do or take a while to do it. Like, what techniques have you found quite effective with people you've worked with?
It is just trying to have that perspective. And sometimes it is about challenging yourself to go for good enough, which sounds mental, if you're trying to achieve the top in something, but go for good enough sometimes. You don't always have to give everything 100%, and it is about doing things in a really purposeful way. And I know I keep talking about purposeful practice, but I really believe in that. You know, also not comparing yourself to others, compare yourself to yourself. I think that's a big one. In being a perfectionist, sometimes you can look at others and think, I just want to be like that person and they're just so good, I'm never going to reach that level. But actually, if you can adopt a growth mindset, you'll be able to just focus on yourself and just keep thinking, you know, you'll tell yourself, well, actually, just because I can't do this now doesn't mean I'm not going to achieve it in 3 months' time.
Mm.
And I love what, you know, Carol Dweck is the person who speaks all about growth mindset. And she always says, just add one word, which is yet. I'm not good enough yet, or I might not be good at cooking yet. Doesn't mean that I'm not going to be good at it in a few months' time. So I think practicing positive self-talk and saying no, having healthy boundaries, that sense of purposeful practice, all of those things can really help with being a perfectionist.
It's really cool that you've mentioned growth mindset and the work of Carol Dweck, because it'd be good to get your opinion on this, because I've noticed, and it might be social media painting a poor picture of this, but whenever you see people posting about growth mindset and how it's really important, I get the impression that everyone thinks they've got a growth mindset. Is there like sometimes there's a lack of awareness where people actually have quite a fixed mindset, or they have a growth mindset in certain, actually quite fixed in others, and are just completely not aware that they're quite fixed? Yeah, it'd be good to get your opinion on that, because whenever I see it on social media, it comes across as that everyone thinks they have a growth mindset. But I'm not sure people do. And I question myself. I think I have got a growth mindset. I probably have a limited growth mindset in certain areas. But I think I would need someone else to help me point that out, if you know what I mean.
I just know, of course, we don't all have a growth mindset. I think it's something that you have to, certainly for someone like me, where I have a tendency to always think negatively, which sounds crazy as a performance coach and as someone who generally lifts people up to achieve their goals. But when I think about myself, I struggle so much with negative self-talk, and I consciously have to work at it every single day. It's not something that comes easy. I think a lot of people are that way inclined naturally. My husband, for example, is super positive. He always sees the, you know, the upsides to things. For most people, it is something that you have to practice and you have to consciously do. I actually have done a bit of an experiment with growth mindset recently, because I've challenged myself. So I've always wanted to learn how to sing, and I've set myself a target at the end of last year, which was to start singing lessons. And to, this is completely mad, but to go in front of an audience and sing a song. And so it's coming out, it's on the 2nd of May. I'm going to be singing in Covent Garden in London on stage. Wow. In front of an audience. And I'm literally tone deaf. Like I really wanted to challenge myself, because I knew this was something that I felt was kind of impossible. And I wanted to see if it worked, you know, if adopting a growth mindset would work doing something that's really challenging, that is well outside my comfort zone. Even now I'm feeling a bit panicked thinking about the prospect of doing it. But actually, it's really helped me to understand that it's not easy to adopt, especially when you're doing something really difficult. But it's been such a good exercise for me to show me that, again, I won't be the best singer on stage. And I'm actually singing Etta James, A Sunday Kind of Love, which is completely unrealistic, being someone who can't sing and just an absolutely amazing song singer of all time. Yeah, it's given me the confidence that, you know, whatever happens, I am going to go out on stage and have fun with it. And hopefully the audience will come along with me and it won't be as bad as I think it'll be in my head. But every day I've been kind of saying to myself, you know, I am good enough, I can do this, just go out and have fun. And, you know, it's that kind of reframing in your head and making yourself believe that you can do it. But it's such a powerful tool, such a powerful thing.
Will the performance be filmed and end up on YouTube?
It is being filmed, actually. I just got an email yesterday saying that it's going to be recorded, and I'm going to probably put it out there just to show as well, you know, this is what you can do. But I'm not saying, I don't think it'll be brilliant by any means, but I think even just having the courage to do something that you are really scared to do, I always say you've got to replace that fear with the word learning, because whatever happens, it's going to be a learning experience. And so I'm super excited to kind of put myself out there. And actually, when I think about it, I haven't done something like that since I was fencing. When I didn't make the Olympic Games, one of the hardest times in my life, still is actually, when I think about it, I remember having this feeling where it burnt my ambition to ever put myself out for anything important ever again, because why would I put my body on the line, my ego on the line for something that might not happen? And it affected me for quite a long time, where I didn't want to go for anything kind of difficult or important to protect myself. I think actually, when I actually think about this moment that's coming up, it's kind of quite an exposing moment where I am putting myself out there. But I'm hopefully going to approach it with a different mindset, which is to enjoy it and have fun and just see kind of what more I can get from that experience. Kind of nice actually reflecting on it now, just talking to you. It's kind of nice that I'm allowing myself to do that again, because it feels like I've kind of fully healed from being really burnt in the past, you know?
That's great to hear. It reminds me of the idea around being outside of your comfort zone. Again, something that I think that's overly used on social media, because you'll see people like, look at me, I'm getting outside my comfort zone, and they're doing something that they clearly really enjoy. So I was like, it's not really that far outside of your comfort zone, is it? Just because you're physically working hard doesn't always mean it's outside your comfort zone. Whereas what you describe, especially performing in front of people, yes, there's going to be pressures, but it's the pressure you put on yourself, and that's what creates the lack of comfort. And that's what's going to challenge your growth mindset, I think, and challenge how you perceive stress and all of those types of things. So it's really cool to see. And that's why I asked if it was going to be on YouTube, because, you know, it isn't just a performance. It's a challenge to yourself that I think is a really cool thing to people to see. So if there's a link, YouTube, whatever it might be, I'd love to put it alongside this, the show notes on this episode.
God.
More pressure on you.
Well, it's good. Come on, give me all the discomfort as possible. I'll try and step up to it. It's a stressful thing for me, definitely. And I think, I do want to kind of share some of it, because it's important for people to see other people put themselves into uncomfortable situations. Like you say, it's the only way, you know, we always call that stretch zone the learning zone. And I really believe in that. I'm actually going to bring my little girl to come to see me perform. She's only six, but I want her to see mummy on stage doing something that really scares her. And even if it doesn't go the way I want it to go, you know, at least she can see it's important to keep trying, keep learning. And that's the important thing, isn't it?
Exactly. No, I reckon you'll be absolutely brilliant. I'm going to interrupt here because I wanted to share with you the Progress Theory newsletter. If you want the latest information and recommendations on how to optimize your physical and mental performance, then subscribe to the free Progress Theory newsletter on Substack today. Click the link in the show notes and subscribe to get the best information on human performance sent straight to your email. Now, back to the podcast. On top of that, actually, so you've said that you work with a variety of different people, including musicians and performers on stage. Do you think this experience is helping you understand their anxieties around that, and that helps you with their coaching?
Yeah, of course, definitely. Like, I know what it's like to step onto stage now, what I will do. You know, the spotlight's on you, there's no hiding place, and it's just, it is exposing yourself. But I think I always feel like I've got an affinity with any kind of performer, because ultimately, whether you're a classical musician, whether you're an athlete, or whether you're someone who's working in an office trying to strive for something that's really important to you, you know, we're all striving for that perfect performance, whether it's the perfect race, the perfect performance within an orchestra. That's what we're striving for. And so whatever you're doing in any kind of high-performing environment, I believe that there's so many lessons that we can learn from each other. And there's lots of tools and techniques, especially in the musical world, that I've learned in sport that they haven't really thought about as much. So it's amazing to be able to support them with certain things like, you know, visualization or warming up their brains in different ways. That's going to help unlock things that, you know, they may not have experienced before in their music careers. So that's been super exciting to see the difference that it can make, looking at things from different perspectives and learning from other people from different high-performing environments. There's always going to be crossovers and learnings, right? So yeah, it's been such an interesting experience.
Yeah, that was actually going to be my next question. Do you see trends with the different groups that you work with? So you've got athletes, musicians, or on-stage performers, and you said you work with people that come from disadvantaged backgrounds. Do you see trends between all of them, but also slight differences which enable you to sort of make changes which you think are appropriate for that individual?
Yeah, I think with every person I work with, normally the trends that I see are things like fear of failure. Time and time again, everybody has that same fear of failure. the kind of limiting beliefs that they're not good enough, or what if something goes with those what ifs, those annoying little inner critic voices in your head that kind of stop you from doing something that you really want to do. I think no matter what level you are, that can sometimes creep in. And so, yeah, that's kind of the main kind of trends and themes that I've seen around anyone wanting to achieve any type of goal, is that fear of failure.
So if that's the main link between, or link's the wrong word, you know, the similarities between these different groups, do you see any differences between, I don't know, someone that comes from a disadvantaged background versus an elite on stage violinist, for example?
Everybody's different. They come from different environments, different circumstances where they've been brought up. And I think what I'm trying to say is that a lot of people, especially in high performing environments, everyone has very similar insecurities. And it is just about really trying to pull apart where those insecurities come from, and then thinking about giving them ownership to understand, you know, what is it, what steps can I take to really take control of where I want to be. And the more I can do that as a coach, so just asking those empowering questions to unlock certain limitations that they might have, the more they're going to be able to take control and feel empowered to take those steps themselves. And there's just something just really beautiful about seeing someone kind of achieve their potential, but then also take the ownership themselves. It's just amazing to see.
Yeah. It's almost like you step back and just watch them achieve what they have the potential to achieve. And there's a lack of, well, I've told you exactly what to do, you've got better. Look at me. It's more like, just look at what they've done for themselves. And it's a great feeling. Interesting you say the words, oh, I'm not good enough, and the fear of failure. Certainly when growing up, I wouldn't say it was necessarily a fear of failure, but I had always had this sort of voice in the back of my head saying, you're not good enough. But that led to being one of the key drivers of me keeping pushing. So I didn't try to avoid it, to avoid failing. I had that, you're not good enough, you're not good enough voice, which then kept me to keep pushing and almost become obsessed over certain things to try and get as good as possible. Yeah. It's weird how similar insecurities can push different people in different ways. I'm obviously only talking about my experience, and I'm sure there's a variety of different experiences, but do you see similar insecurities and then they have like a completely different outcome on the person?
I like that idea of kind of, I mean, you've obviously got an amazing ability already, even from a young age, to just be able to reframe, you know, some of the difficult kind of conflicting thoughts and feelings that you may have had growing up. You know, you use that as a driver to help drive your performance and to drive your goals. Incredible. That is what you should do when you've got difficult thoughts or feelings, you know, and it is trying to understand that you can't always control your thoughts, but you can absolutely control your thinking, right? You can control how you respond to something, how you act to something, your behaviors towards something, and which is going to control the outcome. And so in that respect, you know, whether you're someone who's trying to perform at the proms, or whether you're someone who, you're an athlete who's trying to reach Olympic Games, or just someone who's trying to get a job and make something out of their lives, I think if we can kind of, you know, you are not always your thoughts. And if you can control them in a positive way and control your thinking towards the way you think about yourself, if it is negative, then you can have complete power over it, is what you're trying to achieve. Yeah, it's just such a powerful thing. And I've only just recently been able to start doing that. When I reflect back on it, I do feel like I was, as I mentioned earlier, I've always thought negatively about myself, and I still do, but I'm able to control it a lot better now. And actually thinking back, I wonder if I actually had OCD tendencies when I was fencing, because, or even just growing up as a little girl, like, my thoughts were just always controlling my head, and it would become, I'd catastrophize things in my head. It would make me really, really anxious. I remember even just going to school one day, my friends would just laugh at me saying this because they'll remember this day. So, and this is way back, just showing my age now, but I used to have a fountain pen going to school. That was the main pen that I used to write with. And I remember, like, I don't think I had a mobile phone at the time, so I remember asking the receptionist to call my mum at home to check if my fountain pen was on my desk at home, to make sure that it was safe and I hadn't lost it, you know, just crazy. And I just always remember thinking, like, always like triple checking things, and like it being such a stressor in my head and something that was completely, it just would overtake, you know, and I had these intrusive thoughts and worries and feelings about myself. Now, thankfully, I think that's because of what I do as well and what I've learned along the way and the job that I do, I'm able to have these tools and techniques to help control and reframe things and tell myself that I am enough and I am good enough, you know, and I can do this.
Say we used ourselves when we were younger as a bit of a case study. We are moving on from the youth stage of developing ourselves as an athlete. We're kind of 18, 19, reaching kind of the elite level, but definitely from competing at the adult level. But I remember certainly being very naive at that time, and probably where these intrusive, you're not good enough thoughts were a bit more, they're more strong, maybe because I was just naive and younger and didn't have the sort of mental capabilities to cope with them. Say if I was your client, what kind of techniques do you think you would do with me to help me through that process and certainly appreciate the learning process that I'm going through at that stage?
First of all, be conscious of the thoughts that are running through your head. How often do you feel this way? And once you consciously, you know, realize that you're thinking them, it's just like stopping and challenging them and thinking about how you might reframe them. So, you know, if you wake up in the morning and go, oh, can't be bothered to go to the gym today, really can't be bothered, you know, that's just kind of negative thought. Just say to yourself instead, I get to go to the gym. I get to go and spend an hour, whatever it is, an hour and a half on myself, on my own personal development, and feel good at the end of it. So sometimes that little shift, that reframe of your mindset really, really helps. Yeah, I think it's about also I do a lot of visualization, trying to declutter the thoughts that are in your head. It's almost like, you know, imagining, I used to just like whatever negative thought I had, and it would always be this supermarket brand bag that I'd just put it in. I'd visualize tying the knot and just throwing it away. I quite like kind of using visualization. It really helps me. But of course, that might not help for everyone else. So it really is also thinking about what works for you, what makes you tick. I remember really clearly it was at a European Championships. I was fencing the number one in the world and I was well outside. I don't know where I was in the world, maybe even, you know, 100 in the world at the time. And it was completely mismatched. And I remember saying to my coach, I said to him, I really don't want to fence this fencer. She's an absolute legend in fencing. She's amazing. I'm just going to go out there and embarrass myself. Like, I really don't want to do this. And he just said to me, don't see this as a threat. I want you to see this as an opportunity. I want you to see this as an opportunity to go out there and give it 100%. And just doesn't matter what the outcome is, you know, you've got everything to gain. And that's it. Go out there and have fun. And that was, and I remember him, he was like taking my sword because I used to get really tight sword on, which is what I used to fence with. He would just like shake it out, physically shake it out. So again, doing physical actions and things like that can really help changing the environments as well. But the main thing, the main learning from there was to kind of always see things as an opportunity rather than a traumatic experience or a threat or something that is going to be difficult for you to do. For me, it just, everything comes down to mindset and how can you open your mind? How can you have that growth mindset? You know, that's what it is, to be able to do the things that you're worried about or afraid of, or to stop putting yourself down, you know.
No, that sounds really cool. And it reminds me of something else I heard once, which talked about if you're nervous or scared about something in particular, change the sentence to start with, I'm excited for. And then it just changes your perception of what, whatever that is.
Right.
So everything was like, I'm excited. I am excited for da, 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 da.
I love that.
I thought it was something that kind of worked at the time I was hearing it. And it's funny as you say about the, you know, your negative thoughts, you put them in like a Tesco carrier bag in your mind and you sort of tie them up and throw them away. I've done something similar. Mine was bubbles. So I popped them in a bubble and it just floated off.
Oh, amazing. I love that.
It's weird how different visualizations come up that you can't really control. It's just, think about it in this way. All of a sudden it's visualizing a way specific to you. So it's always cool to hear different people's versions, you know?
I was listening to a podcast of, I can't remember his name now. I'll have to tell you to put in the notes later, but it was the same sort of thing. Like when you've got really chaotic thoughts and feelings and you're not feeling so good about yourself, just imagine it's like a snow globe and you shake it up and there's sort of, you know, the snow is falling everywhere. This snow globe in particular had a Buddha in, which was quite kind of, you know, where you're kind of calm and centered. And just imagine everything just falling and you not resisting it, just letting it fall down and just seeing it fall and just being that kind of observer of your thoughts. And I thought it was just a really nice way, again, to visualize. And I thought, oh, you know what? I'm going to get a snow globe and put it on my desk, because every time I'm feeling like I've not got that clarity of thought. I can just shake it up and just watch everything just kind of dissipate. And I think for me, sometimes it's not always about fighting your thoughts, is it? It's kind of just letting them go, letting them sit, letting yourself feel them. And, you know, quite often that gives you kind of control over your thoughts in the end, because it's just not the thing that's controlling you anymore because you're not resisting it.
Oh, very true. Claire, that was absolutely amazing. Where can people find out more about Perform Be Happy?
So you can go on my website, so www.performbehappy.com, or on Instagram. It's just at Perform Be Happy. You can just email me as well. You can find that on the website, so claire@performbehappy.com.
Yeah, certainly. I definitely recommend everyone listening if you're interested in this type of thing, especially around mindset, change of perception for elite performance or any type of performance. Really, these tools can be really helpful for anyone. Just get in contact with Claire and I think it'll be absolutely great. Claire, that was amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Phil. I've loved every second. Thank you so much for having me.
Before we wrap up, I want to give a shout out and my thanks to my production partner, Cult Media. If you are thinking of launching a podcast or want to grow your audience, head to www.cult.media, that's cult with a K, to get started today.